Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and it is the 16th of June, 2014, and you're listening to the EMS, EMSO, and a Fair Recovery Library call. We have three questions today, so let's get moving. First question. Car texting. Crash, health, example from June 9th Q&A. I am the hurt spouse that has been dealing with my broken spouse for 16 plus years since D-Day. Your example of texting while driving is a good analogy for our marriage. The car would be our marriage. My unfaithful partner is the driver, texter. My questions. What do I do if my partner driver continues to text while driving? When they know it's careless, reckless, and dangerous in all in the car. So I'm just going to answer each one of these questions individually as we go through. The answer to that one to me is you don't ride with that person in the car. One of my beliefs is if someone is unsafe, reconciliation may not always be the best option, and part of that is something that you have to look at. But if someone's heart is really hard, then it's probably something you want to be very careful about. If they're living in denial and self-deception and don't even see the problem, that's something that doesn't make them safe. If they're ambivalent about what to do, that also doesn't make them very safe. On the other hand, if they're determined to change but they're having trouble, then there might be something else you would want to look at. But hopefully, there's at least a desire to stop texting and being careless and reckless. If not, there are some hard decisions ultimately you have to make. Either God gives you the grace to continue to love this person and be with them, or if you don't believe they'll ever change, this is one of those situations that at least telling them it's not okay to be this way, which is why you're separating, may actually be a good option. But if you say you're separating, please be sure to follow through with that. Don't say something like that and then not follow through. You don't want to use it as threats. At the same time, it may be, as you say, there's really the reason we're separating is because you need to get help. And it's because I love you, not because I'm mad at you, because it's just not okay to be this way. Do it out of love as best you can rather than anger. The second half of that is what do passengers do when the car crashes over and over and over again and the driver says, sorry, forgive me, and then goes and hides in the trunk. Meanwhile, I'm broken, bloody, asking for help. We have had so many careless wrecks since D-Day that my car is now on fire, shredded, and the molten metal, burned glass, charred plastic, and rusted wreckage is embedded in my flesh. It is a huge mess. Even if I went to the hospital to fix me, I still have to use that same wrecked car and careless driver to get me home. Scary beyond comprehension. There is no safety in our car, but leaving the car is not an option for me. This is our car. It's the only car I will ever have. That being the case, boundaries in a relationship are not intended as consequences for the other person, nor is it made to change the other person. Boundaries are decisions that you make ultimately to protect yourself. For instance, if I'm walking by and your foot's out in the aisle and I step on your foot, you might say, Rick, you know, please be careful. If I step on your foot multiple times, eventually what you're going to do is move your foot so I can't step on it. Same sort of thing. Remaining kind of a loving detachment as a way of not allowing yourself to be completely vulnerable and going on and doing what you need to do to take care of yourself, regardless of whether they agree, is going to be important in this situation. Marriages change unilaterally, not bilaterally. It takes two people agreeing to do the same thing over and over for a marriage to stay stuck. If one person changes, it does force the entire marriage to somehow shift. being careful how you protect yourself, or maybe not trying to rescue, not enabling. I don't know what that would look like, but I'd suggest doing some things differently. For instance, you might try doing something like Al-Anon, which is really about focusing on your own recovery, not your mate. If you haven't done Harboring Hope, maybe that's a possibility. Anything ultimately to keep you safe, I think, is going to be important. And hopefully, you know, if she would be willing, even doing something like EMSO would be helpful. And I can't remember from June 9th whether y'all are involved in something, but hopefully you're able to quit getting in the car, even though you may still be sharing a car with them. It's just that you want to protect you and your kids, and in a loving way, but say as long as you're being careless, there's certain things we won't do in the car with you. So hopefully that gives you some general ideas. Second question. Hi, Rick. My husband and I are nearly 2 years into recovery and getting along pretty well. We live in the same town as his AP, and this is hard for me. It is the fear related to seeing them that I don't like. Well, the other day it happened. After 2 years, we briefly crossed paths with his AP. As I suspected, I didn't do too great with it. The day was ruined for me at that point. I became angry and had the urge to start questioning again. I expressed my anger and hurt my husband, and he comforted me. He was also in a lot of pain and very angry with himself. So there we both were, again, frustrated and in pain. I started going to dark places again and spent the rest of the day wrestling with my emotions. I started to feel like a huge victim again and ridiculously mad that I had to live my life this way. By the next day, after reading your article on fear, I was able to pull through it again and was proud of myself for regaining my composure faster than I thought I would. Moving is not an option for us, so I would like to know how my husband and I can get through these situations without so much emotional turmoil. How can we start to see things differently? Thank you again for your help. I know this can be done, as I'm sure many people do. We just need some additional guidance on this particular issue. But one of the things that I usually recommend if I'm working with somebody who has an AP around is go ahead and pre-plan how you're going to respond and what will happen given in any situation. For instance, I might have somebody write out 20 what-ifs, which would be, what if we see them in the grocery store? Well, we're going to do this. What if we see them here? What if we see them at a sporting event? And by coming up with a specific plan, a lot of times being forearmed is very helpful, where you already know the response. It takes away a lot of the power that the AP has. Another thing is not to be afraid, but actually to, again, as the two of you plan, talk about it. The reality is your husband chose you. And you need to ask yourself, why is it so painful for me when I see her? I mean, the obvious might be it reminds you of what your husband did. But you also want to examine, is there an element, for instance, of pride? Is there a part of you that it's hard because you feel like she has something over on you? So if there are issues that make it hard, I guess writing down, why are you afraid of seeing her? Because, again, it sounds like your husband's responses were good. He's definitely chosen you, not her. And obviously people always affair down, so why is that a problem? Because in the long run, there's also a part of you, if there's pride, that goes, you know what, ultimately, I'm the one, you know, who won out in this situation. I am very proud of you for getting through this in 2 days. That's pretty amazing. or a day, basically, which I know is a huge point of progress. So looking at the progress both of you have made, and another discussion you might have with your husband is, how did it make you feel when you saw them? Both of you share that. And what were you telling yourself once you saw them? Just communicate about that. And finally, what you feel like your partner could do different next time that could help, and what you feel like you could do different to improve the situation. And vice versa. Both share, if it were to happen again, back to the ifs, what could you do different? Eventually, what happens is you no longer fear seeing that person. In fact, you may just end up being angry, not even hurt, or you may feel nothing. You want to ultimately forgive them and come to the place where all you have is no response, almost apathy, or at least concern and compassion, but certainly not that you would want a relationship with them, but where you're healed enough that they no longer have power over you. And the best way to do that is giving yourself the gift of forgiveness, letting them go, and knowing that you're in a better place. So I hope that can help you if that were to ever happen again. But begin by writing your what ifs, and let's see how that helps. Next question. An affair that began before marriage. In the affair recovery materials, I have frequently encountered discussions on the topic of the happiness that spouses felt on their wedding day, and that the spouse who cheated had good intentions when originally taking their wedding vows. I'm in a situation where my spouse began an emotional and sexual affair a year ago before we got married, and then continued it for 6 years after we got married. My husband asked for forgiveness before he revealed the start and stop dates of the first three of his affairs. I feel so broken and betrayed. My question: if he didn't even intend to be faithful to me on our wedding day, does that mean that we have a lower likelihood of maintaining fidelity for the rest of our lives? In week 5 of our EMSO workbook, ask us to think about or think back to happy times, presumably when there was fidelity at the beginning of the marriage, to combat triggers. When should I think about it? How do I think about it if I don't even have that? When I think back to the beginning of our marriage, it's just another trigger to think about the first affair. So a situation like this is obviously a little different. One of the things I'm curious about as I read this particular question is, how long have you known? When was D-Day? Because it sounds like there was an emotional sex year that started before you got married. It continued for 6 years. He asked for forgiveness when he revealed the start and stop dates of his first three affairs. So were you at 10 years when he revealed the affairs? Were you 3 months? When did you find out? And of course you would feel broken and betrayed. So if he didn't even intend to be faithful to me on the wedding day, does that mean that we have a lower likelihood of maintaining fidelity for the rest of our lives? And by the way, this isn't the first time I've seen that. My question would be, why did he stop the last affair? What made him choose at this point to be different now? It may be, even on the wedding day, and I don't know this, it would be a question I would want to ask, did he intend even then to stop the affair, or was it in his mind something he was going to continue? And again, back to when he told you, why did that change? What I would, if there's any hope, what I'd rest that hope on is the shift that occurred when eventually he came clean and you know, if he was caught. But if he came clean on his own, that's another thing. Even if someone's caught, it doesn't mean they're not broken. But I think in the long run, well, for instance, King David, when he was confronted by Nathan, even though he was caught, he was certainly very, very broken. And so people can be caught and be broken. As you go forward, I think a lot of it has to do with their heart. Sometimes, and I talked to a gentleman about this last week, someone may do something for a long time because they never really consider it a bad thing because of the way they're raised. And I'd be curious how this guy was raised and what their values were. But once they get into recovery, they begin to realize this is a huge problem. And denial is the fact that it's about self-deception. They never even see that they have a problem until the lights come on. So maybe it's a situation like that. I don't know, but hopefully that can give help a little bit. So in week 5 of the workbook, it keeps asking you to think back to a happy time to combat the triggers. I know that you don't have fidelity back at the beginning, but other things you might look at, if there were good times, if there were positive moments, even in the relationship where things seem to be going well between the two of you, those would then be the points I would focus on at this point. I would try to find things other than the affair, times where hopefully there's a break, that they're not continuous but rather sequential. You know, if there's a break in there, then that's something that really might be helpful. Or maybe just if there are good times, even while this is going on, and it's apparent to you that it's a solid, healthy relationship, or so you thought, there may be some reality to that. The main thing is, why did it shift, and why would it be different as you go forward? I know this is a really difficult situation. I just hope that he's willing to do what's necessary to be able to keep you safe as the two of you go forward. So that's all of our questions today. I want to thank everybody for joining the call. And certainly I hope you guys have a good week. And I look forward to talking to you next week. To healing.